Hi, old-time radio lovers. This is Bob Cameradale, your host at Boxcar's 7-Eleven Old-Time Radio Pod. I'm deviating from my normal show opening to make an appeal to you, the listening audience, to help support this great programming, to make a donation of $1 or $2 a month to the Radio Memories Network. And it's not to my show. It's not to Boxcar's 7-Eleven Old-Time Radio Pod. I'm not asking for that. I'm asking you to support the network itself that offers so much more than my show. Great programming like La Jazz Affair, Big Band Serenade, Yesterday USA, The Radio Detective Story Hour, Just Old Time Radio, and Sci-Fi Friday, just to name a few. And you can search the internet far and wide, and you may be able to accumulate some of these programs, but you're never going to find anything as unique as the Radio Memories Network, all under one roof and no cost to you. It's fundraising time, and so I'm asking my listening audience to do their share. $1 or $2, the cost of a soda, will help to defer the cost of bandwidth and the cost of putting these programs together for your listening enjoyment. You can make your contributions, ask your questions and suggestions, comments, by contacting directly Mr. Dennis Humphrey at Radio Memories, that's one word, radiomemories@gmail.com. Please, don't put it off till tomorrow. The network is in financial need, and to lose Radio Memories Network would be a big loss to all of us. Again, that email address, radiomemories, one word, @gmail.com. I want to thank you in advance, and now let's get on with our program.
You're listening to Shoutcast Radio.
The opening is familiar among fans of old-time radio. Quote, the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator. End quote. And if we still weren't sure, he always told us himself, yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Opening on a Friday night, February 18, 1949, with the Paracol policy matter, it was right at the start of television's golden age, and this radio show brought us a high-powered insurance investigator who worked chiefly for the Universal Adjustment Bureau, a clearinghouse for many insurance companies. The series star Charles Russell is Johnny Dollar, the smart and tough detective whose trademark it was to toss silver dollars as tips to busboys and bellhops. Appearing on CBS Radio, Johnny Dollar was heard every week flying off to a different town filled with danger and possible murder as he tried to get to the bottom of insurance fraud. There were rarely any recurring characters except Dollar, despite sometimes romance and friends, the character was generally a loner. These early episodes, however, tended to be flat and the character of Dollar too dry. So at the start of the 1950 season, Charles Russell was out and veteran film actor Edmund O'Brien stepped in as the second Johnny Dollar. The series during the O'Brien years improved with scripts by expert crime writers such as E. Jack Newman, Jack Michael Hayes, Sidney Marshall, and Blake Edwards. The character took on the stereotype of the American detective developed by Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler. Dollar was more hard-boiled. His softer side rarely appeared. O'Brien left in 1952 and John Lund became Dollar number 3. With Lund in the role, the characters as developed by O'Brien remained. In 1955, radio actor Bob Bailey, fresh from his long run as George Valentine in Let George Do It, stepped into the role as the fourth Johnny Dollar. It was with Bailey that the series really blossomed. Changing to a 15-minute format 5 times a week, and under the sharp eye of the new producer-director, Jack Johnstone, the scripts got much deeper in characterization and plot, and Bailey's depiction of Dollar had shades of a gritty street fighter, yet bright and sensitive. With a strong cast, many of the same veteran radio actors appearing in different roles, and excellent directing, the portrayals were much more real. Even when radio drama was already declining, this was radio acting at its best. The sound effects, some of which were canned, fit into the script so well as to produce some very exciting adventure mystery. But doing a daily show, live, was taxing. So by the end of 1956, the series reverted to a 30-minute, once-a-week episode. Even so, the power of the show continued, due a lot to the continued presence of both Billy and Johnstone. Gradually, however, toward the end of the 1950s, the show began to sound tired. Some of the scripts were weak, and even Bailey did not always seem excited. Bailey left the show when it moved to New York Production Studios, and initially, Bob Reedick filled Johnny Dollar shows. However, that was only a transition that lasted 6 months. In June 1961, Mandel Kramer came to the role. He was perhaps the second best of the Dollar portrayals. Kramer's Dollar displayed more cynical humor than Bailey's. Johnny Dollar remained sensitive yet tough, and with Jack Johnstone continuing as producer, the series remained popular right up to its demise. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, has the distinction of being the last dramatic radio series from the golden age of radio. As with the close of suspense, radio drama sounded its death groans. Among many old-time radio fans, Johnny Dollar is usually viewed as a division between original radio drama and a resurgence of nostalgia which began in the 70s. Today, we're going to listen to an episode entitled The Mojave Red Matter, Part 1 and Part 2. Part 1 aired July 13, 1958, and Part 2 a week later on the 20th of July. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this truly old-time radio classic. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
It's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Will you accept a collect call, Mr. Dollar?
Huh?
It's from Lake Mojave Resort in Arizona.
Oh, say no more, operator. Just put them on.
Well, yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Hi, who is it this time? Buster Favor, Hemp Red?
Johnny, this is Red.
Yeah, well, how's the fishing? Time for me to make another trek westward and find out... Huh? Red?
That's right, Johnny.
Red who?
Guide out here, Red Barrett.
The fishing guide?
Well, yes, sir.
Who claims to know Lake Mojave like the back of his hand and every good spot there is in it?
And I do, Johnny. That's a fact.
Then I repeat my question. How's the fishing?
Just as fine as ever, if you know where the good holes are, that is.
And you do?
Yes, I do.
So you think it's high time I fly on out there and wet a line, is that it?
No, sir. That's not what I'm calling you about, Johnny.
Well, what is it?
I don't rightly think I ought to tell you over the phone, Johnny. I think you better come here just about as quick as you can.
But unless I know why...
I'll tell you when you get here.
Well, look, I usually do my traveling on expense account for an insurance company.
And you can this time.
Huh? What company?
The one that insured him, the Greater Southwest Insurance.
Insured who, Red?
Johnny, I'll tell you all that when you get here.
Now look.
They tell me there's a plane leaves New York right at high noon.
Listen, Red.
That'll get you into Las Vegas about 9:45 tonight, okay?
Okay, listen.
Goodbye, Johnny.
Red! Crazy old coach. He thinks for 1 minute that I'm going to get on. And yet, on second thought...
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Greater Southwest Insurance and Liability Company, Kingman, Arizona office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Mojave Red matter. $1,000. Expense account item 1420, phone call to the Kingman, Arizona office of Greater Southwest Insurance and Liability. On the theory it might be well to check with their agent, Jake Kessler, before going off half-cocked.
Hi, Johnny. Haven't seen or heard from you since 2 years ago when you came out here to investigate the murder at the old Midas touch mine.
Yeah, I remember, Jake. Now listen.
Yeah?
Is everything going along okay these days?
What?
Well, I mean, no trouble with any of your clients, that sort of thing, huh?
Why, not a bit, Johnny. Why do you ask?
Just, wondered.
Well, if I did have, you know who I'd call.
No problems at all, huh?
I told you, not a... Hey, just what do you got stuck in your craw, Johnny?
Nothing.
Well?
Well, tell me this. Any of your clients, policyholders, have any kind of trouble, accidents, anything like that, over at Lake Mojave Resort lately?
Ah, so that's what's eating you. Well, Johnny, that claim was legitimate. It's in the home office for settlement. The company will pay it, and that'll be that.
What claim?
So just you stop worrying about it and forget.
What claim, Jake?
No, sir, Johnny, there's not a single solitary thing for you to investigate out here. So just you forget it.
Hey, you know something, Jake? You've just convinced me there is something to investigate. So I'm grabbing the first plane I can.
Well, Johnny, I'd love to see you, but I swear...
What's more, I'm charging my expense account to your company.
Oh? And, if you find out that I'm right and you're wrong?
Okay, Jake. Then you can shoot the crow and I'll eat it. Expense account item 2, $153, plane fare, Hartford to New York and New York to Las Vegas, Nevada. It was 9:45 on the dot as the big mainliner slowly circled down out of the clear, starlit sky. Unless you've seen the millions of stars that twinkle brightly through the clean, dry air over the Mojave Desert, you've really missed something. And as we glided down toward the landing strip on the south edge of Las Vegas, the multicolored lights of the fabulous resort town made it sparkle like a vast field of jewels. Beautiful. Yeah, and expensive. That is, if you insist on trying your hand at the gaming tables and the casinos that line the main drag. Believe me, brother, I know. But that's neither here nor there. As I grabbed my luggage and started for the car rental office, a tall, angular man, well-tanned and dressed in blue jeans, high-heeled boots, and 10-gallon hat, sauntered over to me.
So you wouldn't take my word for it.
Mm. Oh, Jake.
That's right, Jake Kessler in person. And, Johnny, if you're here to investigate the claim on the Hobbs policy, well... They just
Hobbs, huh? Well, now I know that much. And suppose you tell me who Hobbs is, or was.
I'll tell you all about it. And when I have, you can hop on another plane and go right on back to Hartford. And all at your own expense. I still don't see whatever made you come out here, Johnny.
Apparently the Hobbs matter. So start telling me. Well, come on, Jake, come on.
All right, Johnny. All right, Elmer P. Hobbs. Real estate in Los Angeles. Came over to the Lake Mojave Resort about 2 weeks ago, spent a few days fishing with his old pal, the guide they have there.
You mean Red? Red Barron?
Yeah.
Well, okay, go on.
And then Tuesday, a week ago, he rented one of the boats and went out by himself. Apparently he went up to a place called the Big Basin.
Yeah, I know it well. The lake's 3 or 4 miles wide up there.
Yeah, well, that afternoon a big wind came up, regular screamer, all the other boats came back to the landing, and all but Mr. Hawk.
Oh.
Next morning, when the wind died down, they found his body washed up on the shore on the Nevada side.
That's all?
That's all.
You say a claim has been filed.
That's right, by one of his two beneficiaries.
Who?
His business partner back in L.A., Mr. Stuart Manley. I've passed the claim, and the company will pay it.
No investigation of any kind?
Oh, of course there was. Johnny, the Kingman police, the sheriff's office, and the county coroner. Accidental death due to drowning. So that's it, Johnny. Now you just... make your reservation back to Hartford at that window right over there, and you are paying the freight.
Oh, not so fast, Jake. I'm sticking around.
Well, now, you can see for yourself there's no reason for you to be here, much less at company expense.
Well, after all, now that I am here, it'd be kind of silly not to run down to the lake.
Well, you mean just to do some fishing on your own time.
You want to drive me down there?
Johnny.
Yeah?
Johnny, do you know something about the Hobbs case that I don't? And the police, and the sheriff.
Jake, I don't know a thing about it.
Okay, Johnny. How do you want me to fix that crow you're gonna eat?
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Our flag now numbers 50 stars, and behind each star there stands yet another flag representing one of the 50 states. Vermont's state flag, in its early form, imitated our national flag, uniquely bearing 17 stripes and 17 stars, with only the inscribed word Vermont to distinguish it. The good people of Vermont assumed, as did our national government, that stripes as well as stars would be added as each new state entered the Union. Vermont entered the Union after Tennessee and Ohio, and with Kentucky to join shortly, the Vermonters naturally put 17 stripes on their flag. In 1818, the United States Congress put a stop to this, and since then the stripes have always been at 13, and only stars are added for each new state. Vermont's present flag captures the famous beauty of the Green Mountain State in its coat of arms, and inscribed is the phrase, Vermont, Freedom and Unity. Vermont's state flag, the flag of the 14th state to enter the Union, was adopted on April 26, 1923.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Mojave Red Matter.
Elmer P. Hobbs of Los Angeles had died of drowning when his small boat capsized in a high wind on Lake Mojave. At least that's what Jake Kessler, his insurance agent, told me. Accident pure and simple, he said, and I could hire myself back to Hartford and forget about it. But I didn't. Simply because of the phone call I'd received from Old Red Barrett, fishing guide at Lake Mojave Resort. I persuaded Jake to drive me over there on the excuse that as long as I was nearby, I might as well do some fishing. So he dropped me off, and since it was after midnight, went on back to Kingman. I wandered on down to the dock and boathouse.
Hello? Who's that?
Ham?
Huh? Johnny? Johnny Dollar?
Yeah.
Johnny Dollar?
What are you doing here?
Hiya, Ham.
Hey, you know darn well what he's doing here, Ham. The fishing has never been better. Only how'd you get the word? And how are you, Johnny?
Oh, just great, Busty.
Did you stop by the office to let Marilyn fix you up with a room?
No, because as I recall, old Red usually sleeps here on the dock.
Oh, Red.
Well, why do you say it that way, Buster?
Because Ham and I are wasting good sleeping time down here wondering why he hasn't come in yet.
You mean he's still out on the lake?
Yes, crazy.
What if it's black as the Ace of Spades out there?
And no moon tonight.
Buster and I were about to take off and about to look for him.
He pulled his very same stunt night before last. We finally found him drifting around about 9 miles up.
He said he'd run out of gas. Showed us at the tank to prove it.
Yeah, but we knew better.
What do you mean, Buster?
I mean, when he saw us coming after him, he dumped out what gas he had. Oil slick all over the lake. If somebody'd struck a match, what?
You know, Red's been doing a lot of crazy things this past week or so. Ever since his old friend, Mr. Hobbs, died, they were pretty close.
And that is why he phoned me.
Red phoned
you? Yeah, early this morning. And if you ask me, it's because he doesn't believe Mr. Hobbs' death was accidental.
Johnny,
you know something? I didn't quite believe it myself. Well, sure, we have some pretty big winds on the lake now and then, and it was a big one that day. And then when the coroner and the other authorities, well, who's to argue with them?
Do you know if Red has found out anything? Anything at all?
All we know is he's given up taking out fishing parties and spends all his time prowling around the lake every day.
And night. Says if he can find the boat Mr. Hobbs used.
What kind of a boat was it?
One of our regular rentals, an aluminum Arkansas traveler.
Yeah, with a 10-horse Johnson on it.
Well, listen. Those boats have flotation tanks.
Why, yeah.
So even if it did capsize, it would sink.
You're right, Johnny.
And there's been no sign of it?
None at all.
Then let's go up to the lake and find Red. Except for the stars far overhead, the night was black as ink. And the 50-horse outboard skimmed us along at better than 30 miles an hour. Believe me, it was a strange feeling, almost like flying through space. How Buster found his way around the island, rocky points and reefs, I'll never know, but he did.
Throw your flashlight over to the left, Ham. You ought to be about even with sculpture rock.
Yeah?
There it is. And we're coming into the big basin.
Would you please tell me how you ever expect to find Red in all this darkness?
Oh, don't worry about him. He hears us coming to a signal by striking a match or something.
Sure, Johnny, no matter how crazy you are, you never let somebody wander around in the dark looking for you out here.
Red knows that, but he's had to come out and hunt too many people at night himself.
And look.
Yeah?
On the east shore. I'm swinging over there.
Hey, you're right. There's a fire on the beach.
Yeah, it must be Red.
What's he doing out here?
We'll soon find out. Hang on.
Well, all I have to say is you took long enough to bring Johnny up here.
Red, you old reprobate, what under the sun are you up to this time?
I just told you. I've been waiting for you to bring Johnny. Now you can leave us and go on back to the dock. And I thank you very much.
Red, we're not leaving until we find out what this is all about.
And if I tell you, would you promise to leave us alone?
Sure. Sure, we'll promise anything.
Oh, you see, I need John's help.
Yes. Well?
Because with him to follow up what I've found today, well, Johnny, you and I are going to prove that my old friend Mr. Hobbs was murdered.
Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Every American fighting man has heard the expression, above and beyond the call of duty. How many of us have sat down and considered just what that word duty means? According to one dictionary definition, duty is man's conduct as required by his station or occupation, and that to which he is bound by moral obligation to do or not to do. When a man does more than his duty requires, he becomes more of a man in the eyes of his fellow men. One such was Captain John Philip Cromwell, commander of the submarine USS Sculpin, flagship of a submarine-coordinated attack group of the United States Navy. Possessing secret intelligence information of our fleet movements, strategy, tactics, and attack plans, Captain Cromwell led his attack group in patrol of enemy waters around Truk Island, in November 1943, just prior to the launching of our first large-scale offensive in the Pacific. Despite savage enemy opposition, he established a line of submarines around the enemy-held stronghold of Truk until his ship, the Sculpin, became so rocked and battered by depth bombs that he ordered it to the surface. He engaged the enemy with deck guns, giving his crew an opportunity to abandon the mortally stricken ship. Determined to sacrifice himself, rather than risk capture and the subsequent danger of revealing the secret plans to the enemy, Captain Cromwell remained aboard the Sculpin as she plunged to her death. He thereby preserved the security of the mission at the cost of his own life. Captain Cromwell earned the Medal of Honor for deep integrity and uncompromising devotion to the call of duty in the service of his country. But what he did defined the word duty better than any dictionary.
And now, Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Mojave Red Matter.
I'll tell you this, Johnny. Red here is one of the wildest, most irresponsible old characters I know when he wants to be. But he's okay nonetheless, and if he thinks you and he can find proof that Mr. Hobbs was murdered, well, he must have a good reason for it.
Well, Red... Oh, now, Ham, do you think a man like Elmer Hobbs, knowing the let the way he did, would ever let the big wind catch him off guard up here in the basin?
No, I don't, Red. I know that's the way Buster felt about it, too.
Well, I said that to you myself, Red.
But now, what's this proof you have of murder?
Well, Ham and Buster, aren't you going on back now that I've told you why I wanted you to bring Johnny here?
Was there any harm in our knowing what you found, Red? After all, we might be able to help you and Johnny.
Yeah, I thought about that, but you see, I might just possibly be wrong about... Well, I might just be wrong, and I wouldn't want to be ashamed in front of a lot of people.
By a lot, you mean three.
Well, that's three times as many as just Johnny here.
Oh, well, now look,
Red. Johnny, he means it, so Ham and I are going back to the dock.
But I still don't see what difference.
Johnny, when you get to know Red as well as we do, you'll stop trying to figure out the whys and wherefores of some of the things he does and what makes him tick. But you'll also learn that in the long run, no matter how unorthodox some of those things are, well, oh, come on, Buster.
Right. See you when you get back to dock, Johnny. Oh, you got some food, Red?
Now, you know I always keep something in my boat, Buster.
Okay.
Well, far be it from me, Red, but all I have to say is that whatever you think you found proof of, it sure better be...
Oh, it is, Johnny. At least I think it is. You just strut yourself a place to sleep in the sand. It's pretty late.
Huh?
Well, it took you so long to get here, and we can't see anything in the dark anyway.
Oh, now look, Red, for heaven's sake.
Good night, Johnny. Sleep well.
And that was the end of our conversation. And I began to wonder if Jake Kessler hadn't been right in the first place. If I hadn't come out here on a wild goose chase after all. But the more I wondered and thought about it, with nothing but the warm desert night about us, twinkling stars, the magic sound of fish jumping in the lake, the sleepier I got. So, I slept. The smell of bacon frying over the campfire awakened me, although the sun still hadn't shone over the mountains that bordered the eastern side of the lake.
Douse your face in the lake, Johnny, then grab yourself some of this bacon and eggs.
I did as I was told. Then, squatting in the sand in front of the fire, stuffed away a hearty breakfast of bacon, eggs, and pancakes made from sourdough. And you know, there's something about a meal cooked over a campfire that, well, we had other things to do. So we climbed into Red's old aluminum boat and slowly drove up the lake, staying close to shore. Finally, we reached a small, rocky cove.
Right here is the spot, Johnny. This little cove.
The spot for what, Red? You know, you still haven't told me.
You see there? You see where somebody has climbed up the rocks?
No, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, he couldn't have climbed up off of the water, so he must have climbed out of a boat.
So?
And there's footprints leading away across the desert. And Johnny, they aren't Elmer Hobbs' footprints, no sir.
So somebody climbed out of a boat here for one reason or another and took a walk into the desert?
The man who killed Elmer Hobbs.
What makes you think so?
Look down over the side. In the water.
Your boat sunk down there.
That's the boat that Elmer had. Can you see it clear?
Yes, very.
Then you can see it wasn't damaged enough to sink it. Not that boat.
You're right, Red. Particularly since it has flotation tanks.
But it's down there. It's sunk. So you better strip to your shorts, Johnny.
I'll go down and take a look.
Me? I already have. But I want you to look, Johnny. And remember, I knew everything that Elmer had in his boat when he left the dock. Remember that.
Okay. And you're sure the footprints leading into the desert couldn't possibly have been made by Mr. Hobbs?
That I'll swear to you, Johnny, by all that's good and holy.
Now then.
Now slip in easy so you won't disturb the water too much.
I took a deep breath, surface dived, and swam down to the sunken boat. And the water was clear, and I could see plainly. And I saw that Red was right. I bobbed back to the surface.
Did you see him? The cut?
Yeah, Red. Those flotation tanks were slashed open with an axe or a sharp, heavy tool of some kind.
But Elmer had no axe on that boat. So it was somebody else, Johnny. Somebody who murdered him. Yeah. And then sank the boat.
Red, I'm afraid you're right. Elmer Hobbs was murdered. There you have it, Jake. And if I were you, I'd call off payment on that claim immediately. Granted, the case isn't over yet, I still have the job of finding out who killed Elmer Hobbs. But you know something? You're going to have to wait for my next report. Meantime, expense account total for the moment, $159.20, including the cost of shooting and retrieving one crow. Jake, how would you like it cooked? Until the next report, then, yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Our flag now numbers 50 stars, and behind each star there stands yet another flag representing one of the 50 states. Oklahoma's state flag depicts an Osage warrior's circular buckskin shield from which hang seven eagle feathers. Across the shield is the Indian's calumet, or pipe of peace, crossed with a white man's peace symbol, the olive branch. On the shield are small crosses, the Indian's graphic sign for stars, indicating lofty ideals or a purpose for high endeavor. The background of the flag is a field of blue, the blue of the Oklahoma sky, signifying loyalty and devotion. The important symbols, however, are the calumet and the olive branch. These override the shield, the symbol of war, and bespeak a predominant love of peace by a united people. Oklahoma's state flag, the flag of the 46th state to enter the Union, was adopted on April 2, 1925.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week? Well, after all, the case isn't to be closed. But it will be next week, believe me. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote today's story. Heard in our cast were Lucille Meredith, Horace Lewis, Harley Bear, Alan Reed, and Barney Phillips. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for the conclusion of this exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Yes, yes. Come in, Mr. Greaseball. Sit down. Have a seat. Yes. What is it that the good doctor can do for you today?
Huh?
Yes, no?
Well, doctor, I'm almost embarrassed to admit that I have a very, very severe addiction.
Ah, yes, yes, addiction. Yeah, today is terrible today.
My wife says if I don't get help, she's going to leave me.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Pornography, terrible. Bad pictures, I know.
No, doctor, no. Not pornography, no.
Drugs, oh my, yes, terrible drugs.
No, not drugs. No, not drugs.
Alcohol, my goodness, oh, terrible, terrible.
Not alcohol either.
Mr. Greaseball, not pornography, not drugs, alcohol. But then, Mr. Greaseball, it's a problem that you have.
Well, doctor, I'm addicted to the Boxcar 7-Eleven old-time radio pot.
Mr. Greaseball, I know this program. It's good, not a problem. Well, there you go. Not a problem. More conclusive professional evidence that Boxcar's 7-Eleven old-time radio pod is good for you. Just type in your browser, boxcar711.lipsing, that's LIBSYN.com. And when you get there, you'll see for yourself. Not a problem.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Your number in Kingman, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thank you, operator.
One moment.
Jake Kessler.
Johnny Dollar, Jake.
So you found out I was right. You left our fair state of Arizona and gone back to Hartford.
Wrong.
Huh? You mean you're still at Lake Mojave Resort?
I sure am.
Then I'm still betting that you haven't found anything to indicate Elmer Hobbs' death wasn't accidental drowning.
Jake.
So your expenses will have to come right out of your own pocket instead of the company.
Listen.
As for that crow you talked about eating, how do you want it cooked?
Listen, where?
What?
Have you mailed in the insurance claim yet?
Oh, I was just about to run it over to the post office when your call came in.
Tear it up.
What?
Because, Jake, Elmer Hobbs was murdered.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Greater Southwest Insurance and Liability Company, Kingman, Arizona office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my further investigation of the Mojave Red matter. Expense account item 120 cents for the phone call to Jake Kessler and Kingman. I made that call in the office there at Lake Mojave Resort. And needless to say, Jake didn't quite believe me at first.
Elmer Hobbs was murdered?
Jake, I'd bet my last buck on it.
Yeah, but, Johnny, the police spent 2 or 3 days over there investigating, the coroner, too, and they all reported no evidence of foul play.
That's simply because they didn't know where to look.
What do you mean?
You know Red Barrett, the old fishing guide over here?
Well, I've heard of him.
Well, Red found the boat that Hobbs used that day. It was lying on the bottom of one of the coves up in the big basin.
Sure, because of the storm that drowned Elmer Hobbs.
Because somebody sank it. That boat had a couple of air tanks on it that would keep it afloat even if it was swamped.
Uh-oh.
But, Jake, those tanks were cut open by whoever killed Hobbs.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
But who did it, Johnny?
That's what I'm going to find out. I'll call you later. I hung up on Jake Kessler, then walked on back to the dock where I found Red Barrett and Buster Faber waiting for me.
Did you get your call to Kingman through all right, Johnny?
Yeah, Red. Jake Kessler's holding up the claim on Elmer Hobbs Insurance.
Good. That's good.
Did you tell Buster what we found up the lake?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Johnny, he did. It's like I said in the beginning, I just didn't see how a man like Mr. Hobbs could ever get himself capsized up in the big ditch, no matter how bad a wind came up.
Buster was the only one that agreed with me, Johnny.
Well, quite frankly, I don't see why everybody wasn't suspicious when Hobbs' boat wasn't found after the storm.
Right, Johnny. But now that you and Red found it, sunk in the bottom of that cove and with the flotation tanks cut open, yeah, it sure looks like murder.
Oh, that's what I thought from the first, Buster. That's why I telephoned all the way to Hartford to get Johnny out here.
But who could have wanted to kill him? Any ideas, Buster?
No, sir, Johnny. I certainly haven't.
You sure there was nobody here at the resort who might have wanted out of the way?
Johnny, the other folks who were here at the time it happened, well, they didn't even know Mr. Hobbs.
You're sure of that?
Absolutely. See, he wasn't much of a mixer. He stayed by himself all the time.
That's right, Johnny. Elmer used to go out fishing first thing in the morning, and he'd be the last to come in at night. He'd go to his room, cook his supper, and then go to bed.
All right, listen. He was killed just before or during the big storm you had.
That's right.
Who else was out on the lake at that time?
Nobody. Nobody from here, that is. All our people, all our boats were back here at the landing. They'd got the storm warning.
So don't you see, John, it must have been somebody from up the lake.
What do you mean?
From one of the other landings.
What other landings?
Cottonwood, Amory's, any one of them. Yes, sir. Somebody sank his boat and tried to sink his body with it.
But we found his body washed up on the Nevada shore. You found it, Red.
Yes, I did. My best friend.
I dove down to that boat, Buster, and I found not only the bashed-in flotation tanks, but where the anchor line had apparently been lashed around the body to hold it there.
And you remember, Buster, the rope marks we found on Elmer's body?
Yeah, but the police, sheriff, coroner, and the rest...
What did they say?
He probably just got tangled up in that rope when he was fighting the storm. But they were wrong.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, why do you say that, Johnny?
Well, because so far this evidence of murder is... Well, it's all circumstantial. It's for motive.
Motive? Well, I hadn't thought of that.
Red, well, the main thing is that
That cutting open the flotation tanks was done with some kind of an axe.
I was asking about motive.
And I know that Elmer didn't have any axe on that boat.
You find the axe, Johnny?
No. Now, Red...
I'll tell you what he had in his boat, beside his clothes, I mean.
Well, let's cover this motor thing.
He had the anchor, of course. That went with the boat.
Red.
He had a nice new Siloflex rod with a Mitchell 300 on it.
Yeah, but now look.
He had a long-handled net that he'd picked up somewhere in L.A., and an old beat-up McKinney tackle box full of plugs and spoons
and a fish.
And that was all, Johnny. No axe. That was all he had.
Red, that bush you're beating around is getting pretty big.
Well, Johnny, I don't know what you mean.
Well, I asked you about possible motive, and so far all you've done is evade the question.
Now, why should I do that?
Well, that's what I want to find out.
Well, now, Johnny,
you know of anyone who might have wanted Mr. Hobbs dead? You say you know him pretty well.
And I did, yes, sir.
Well?
No, sir. No, sir, I certainly don't.
You sure?
Well, Elmer... Well, he... Well, nobody could want to kill a fine man like him, Johnny. He was one of my best friends.
Yeah.
At least, while ever he was here, I mean. I never knew anything about him in L.A., I mean.
He was in business back there, I understand.
That's right, with a man he called Stu Manley.
Wait a minute.
What is it, Johnny?
I'm going back to the office and call Jake Kessler again.
Yes, sir. Elmer was my best friend.
Come on up to the office with me, Buster.
Use the phone here on the dock, Johnny.
No. Come on. Red, we'll see you later.
I'll be here, sir.
You look like you just got hit with an idea, Johnny.
Yeah, I'm afraid it isn't a very pretty one.
Oh?
Morning,
what
Buster.
Is it, Johnny?
Any of the early fishermen come in yet?
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Carson, and they picked up some nice bass up above the power line crossing.
Good. I was thinking of going up that way myself.
Yeah, well, good luck. Now, what were you going to say, Johnny?
Were Red and Mr. Hobbs such really good friends?
Well, they were always together when he came here. Of course, they were always fighting like cats and dogs over some silly thing or other, but didn't mean it. Oh, now, wait a minute, Johnny.
Was Red alone when he found Hobbs' body?
Yeah, he was, and he brought it back here. But now, look.
There weren't any other boats up the lake?
Yeah, there were, but Red was searching that particular part of the shore alone. But surely you don't
Jake
think...
Jake Kessler told me something about Hobbs' insurance policy, but not quite enough.
Johnny, listen.
Come on, let's get to that phone.
Think you ought to call in the police?
No.
If you're right, that is.
No, let me handle this alone for the moment. Now listen, Jake.
Yeah?
Didn't you tell me that the insurance claim was filed by one of Hobbs' beneficiaries, plural?
That's right, by his business partner in L.A.
Who are the others?
Just one other. If you'd taken time to listen to me.
Who is it?
You were so all fired up when I drove you down.
Who
there.
Is this other beneficiary, Jake?
You're still sure Hobbs was murdered, huh?
I'll bet on it.
So now you're looking for somebody with a motive, huh?
The beneficiary, Jake.
Like I told you. One of them was his business partner, J. Stuart Manley.
And the other?
Red.
Red.
Yeah. Red Barrett.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Our flag now numbers 50 stars. And behind each star there stands yet another flag, representing one of the 50 states. Illinois' state flag uses many of the symbols of our nation's great seal. The eagle, the symbol of our national strength, rests on a shield representing the states, indicating that the states and the nation are bound together, for in unity there is strength. The arrows in the eagle's talon indicate military preparedness, and in his beak is a scroll which reads, State Sovereignty, National Union. A reminder of the greatness of the state of Illinois and its pride in being a member of the United States of America. Illinois' state flag, the flag of the 21st state to enter the Union, was adopted on July 6, 1915.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Mojave Red sequel.
Two people who I knew stood to gain by the death of Elmer Hobbs. One, his business partner, J. Stuart Manley in Los Angeles. The other, Red Barrett, fishing guide at Lake Mojave Resort, who said he'd found his body, who professed to have been his best friend. I wondered,
I said as much to Buster Favor as we sat in the office of the resort.
Red, do a thing like that, I won't believe it, Johnny.
But he's the one person who could have engineered the whole thing, Buster.
But why, then, would he lead us to the place where Mr. Hobbs' boat was sunk?
Well,
and point up the fact it was deliberately sunk and an attempt made to sink Hobbs' body with it.
Oh, there's a cover-up? To make him look clean?
Oh, no, Johnny.
Well, the boat would have been found in that cove sooner or later anyway.
I tell you, you're wrong if you suspect Red. Look, if Hobbs' business partner is a beneficiary, too, why don't you look him up?
I fully intend to, unless Red did do it.
No.
And I can prove it.
No, Johnny.
Let's go back to the dock so I can talk to him again and see...
Buster, I just... Oh, hello, Johnny.
I suppose you've heard, him.
Yes, Red told me. You're quite sure it was murder?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Listen, Buster.
Yeah.
Look, Ham, as manager of this resort, you know Red pretty well.
I sometimes wonder. That's what I came up here to ask you about, Buster.
Huh?
Did you send him skiding out of here?
What?
We just left him down at the dock.
You mean you didn't see him tearing out of here in the pickup truck a few minutes ago?
What?
Ham.
Red?
Where'd he go?
I don't know, but he certainly left in a hurry.
Johnny.
Yeah.
No, I still can't believe it.
What are you boys talking about?
Nothing. Ham, is there a car on here I can use?
Oh, sure. Take mine. And the keys.
Thanks.
Incidentally, Buster, I was poking around where Red kept his fishing tackle trying to find that rig he borrowed from me last week.
What did you find, Ham?
Well, I thought Buster might know where the old coot got hold of that new spinning outfit. Siloflex rod.
What?
Yeah, and a brand spanking new...
Mitchell reel.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
All right, Ham, Buster, you just sit tight. If Red comes back here before I do...
Comes back?
Yeah, say nothing to him about what we've learned. Just keep him here and tell him I'll return to talk with him later. Nothing else.
But, John...
No, do as I say.
Look, boys, what's going on?
I'll see you later.
Well, now, Johnny...
Red was one of Elmer Hobbs' beneficiaries. He was the one who'd found the body. He had the fishing tackle that had belonged to Hobbs. And when it was discovered by Ham Pratt, he left in a hurry. All pretty incriminating. Which is not why I took off in Ham's car. West on 77, south on 95, and west again on 66. Item 4, a buck even for a sandwich and a Coke and Barstow. Item 5, 480 for a tank full of gas at the sign of the Flying Red Horse. Then westward again. And always with an eye out for Red and the old pickup truck. Finally, as the sun was disappearing over the edge of the Pacific, I pulled into Los Angeles. The real estate office of Manley and Hobbs was closed. A directory at the nearest phone booth gave me J. Stuart Manley's home address. 1308 Pandora Avenue in the residential section, call Westwood. The neat white stucco house was dark, the garage empty. I let myself in through a back door by slipping the lock with the aid of one of my business cards. It was hard to see inside, but I didn't want to turn on any lights. And that was a mistake. Because as I quietly rounded a corner and started toward the den... I guessed wrong. Somebody was at home. Was in that den behind the now-closed door. And then somebody knew that I was in the house. There was only one thing to do, try to bowl my way through. Well, Mr. Manley, you're just...
Oh, you killer! Wait a minute,
Red.
Johnny Dollar. Well, it kind of looks like I made a mistake, doesn't it?
Yeah, Red. The biggest mistake of your life.
Act 3 of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
A question that has been asked many times is, at what age does a boy become a man? It isn't when he reaches the age of 21, but when the qualities of grit and determination within him make him face up to the responsibilities of a job to be done, no matter what the difficulties. On May 21st, 1862, during the Civil War battle at Corinth, Mississippi, William H. Horsfall was serving as a drummer with Company G of the 1st Kentucky Infantry. During the furious and deadly engagement, he saw his captain fall wounded between the lines. Although, as a non-combatant, Horsfall was supposed to stay out of the range of fire, he rushed bravely forward at the risk of his own life to aid his wounded captain. Ignoring the fact that they were in the midst of a continuing and deadly hail of fire from both sides, the courageous drummer dragged the wounded officer to a place of safety, thereby saving his life. Later on, Horsfall grabbed a gun and some ammunition and went into the fight. But his commanding officer finally sent him to the rear, recommended him for the Medal of Honor, and gave him a furlough. Gallant as the drummer's valorous actions were, the officer felt that 14-year-old William Horsfall was still too young for battle. But Horsfall's personal code had already proved him a man.
And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Depper, and the Mojave Red sequel.
You know what common sense tells me, Red?
What, Johnny?
That you and J. Stuart Manley were in cahoots in the murder of Elmer Hobbs.
Oh, no, so you can't believe that.
You told us that Hobbs had a Siloflex rod, a Mitchell wheel in his boat.
Yes, sir, he did. Just like the
reef. We found him, Red. Among your things back at the lake.
Oh, you found mine, Johnny, that Elmer gave me to match his. Look. Look what I found here in Manley's closet. This was Elmer's rod and reel, Johnny.
What?
All strung up with a wobble right spoon on it, just the way he fished with it. And he could cast so accurate.
You're sure this was his?
Well, here's his initials right on the butt, and scratched on the reel, too.
E.H.
Yeah, if you'd have looked, you'd have found my initials on the rod there at the lake. But look here. Look what I found in the corner of this closet all wrapped up, like to hide it.
The axe.
And I'm no detective, Johnny, but just look at these marks, like it was used to hack at some kind of thin metal.
The flotation tanks on that boat. Maybe you are a detective, Red, and a good one. But why did you come tearing in here to L.A.?
In the hopes, Johnny, I'd find these things. I thought from the first that Manley might be the one. Elmer never did really trust him. He told me that many a time.
But you didn't accuse him when I talked to you at the lake.
I wanted some proof.
Manley'd not only get a hunk of Hobbs insurance, but a share of the business.
That's right, sir. I pulled a little trick on him, too.
What do you mean?
Well, I stopped along the way and I phoned him to make sure that he wouldn't be here for a while.
Well, what did you tell him?
I disguised my voice, Johnny, real good.
That voice of yours?
I told him that this was a friend, I said, that I thought he ought to know that you were working on the case.
Oh.
That if he'd left any evidence at Lake Mojave, he'd better get there and steer you away from it.
Red.
And that's the way I got him away from here so I could find this stuff.
But if he's gone to Lake Mojave...
Oh, I knew you could take care of him. And if I did find these things like I did, I was going to phone you there to be ready for him.
Well, then why did you attack me when I came in here?
Oh, sorry, Johnny, but I thought maybe he'd got wise and come back and maybe recognize my voice after all.
Exactly what happened, Red.
Mr. Manley?
Sir? That's right, J. Stuart Manley. And this is my wife, Mr. Deller. Red?
Shoot them. Kill them, Stuart. They're burglars, don't you see? And we caught them robbing the house.
Quiet, Murray.
I suppose that means we were right. That you did kill your partner, Elmer Hobbs.
That stupid old man, fishing all the time instead of tending to the office, taking all the money.
Mary!
But now we'll have some money for a change. Own the business!
Mary, shut up! I see you found old Elmer's things.
No, sir. This fishing rod is his, not yours.
No, put it down.
Pretty foolish of you to bring that stuff here, Manley. Especially the axe. I'm sure any good police lab will find traces of aluminum from the boat on it.
Kill him, Stuart. They're robbers. Their fingerprints will be all over.
Yeah, Mary's right. Your prowler's ransacking my house. And I can see the bulge of your pistol, Dollar. So any court in the land will uphold my right to kill you in self-defense. And Dollar, you go first.
Listen, you think you can shoot as straight as I can cast a fishing plug?
Huh?
Like this?
Oh, no.
No!
Oh, get back, Mrs. Manley. I'd hate to have to sock a woman.
But you hurt him.
Yeah, as badly as he hurt Elmer Hobbs.
And look, that horrible fishing plug. The hook ripped his hand open. It's bleeding. That red-headed old fool throwing those hooks at him.
Oh, quiet.
Stuart.
Red, that was a beautiful piece of casting. He almost tore his hand off with that plug.
Well, Johnny, it was with Elmer's own rig. I think maybe he would have liked that. I hope so. But
You know what I hope the most, Johnny?
What, Red?
That the fishing is real good up where Elmer is now.
Manly and his wife.
Yeah.
Red has figured right. The morning of the day that Hobbs was killed, they'd rented a boat out of Cottonwood Landing, a few miles up the lake, and ambushed him there in the big basin. Bob Cole at Cottonwood had noticed the new rod and reel when they'd come back off the lake, just before the big storm. Had noticed the axe, too, when he wondered about it. Now he knows. So, from here on in, it's up to the sheriff's office and the courts. Expense account total, including return of Ham's car, a few days of fishing, and the trip back to Hartford, $307 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Our flag now numbers 50 stars, and behind each star there stands yet another flag for each of the 50 states. New Mexico's flag is an ancient Zia sun symbol, a red circle on a field of yellow, radiating from four points, which we might indicate as north, east, south, and west, are four parallel lines. Four was a sacred number of Zia, the number most often used by the giver of all good gifts. The earth had four main directions, each with its own gifts. The year had four seasons, each with a different offering for mankind. The day had four phases, sunrise, noontime, evening, and night. Life had its four divisions, childhood, youth, manhood, and old age. Everything in life and nature was bound together in a circle, the circle of life and love, without beginning and without end. And in this great brotherhood of all things, man had four obligations. He must develop a strong body, a clear mind, and a pure spirit. Fourth, and most sacred, he must devote unselfishly body, mind, and spirit to the welfare of his people. From this simple symbol, the Zia sun, we read the legend of a wonderful philosophy. The flag's colors of flaming red and golden orange represent the banners of Ferdinand and Isabella, which were carried by Columbus across the Atlantic. New Mexico's state flag, the flag of the 47th state to enter the Union, was adopted on March 19, 1925. Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, some of the funniest old characters I ever meet. And a 10-year-old boy solves the case. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote today's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harley Bear, Forrest Lewis, Barney Phillips, Alan Reed, and Russell Thorson. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
This is Bob Camerdola, thanking everyone for tuning in to WPNM, where the oldies are still young. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow at 12 noon for more old-time radio.